hours wait time to get anyone if the government shuts down. Our military would not get paid if we cannot pass a defense appropriation bill. Millions of workers in the federal government wouldn't get paid. Now, they may get back pay, but if someone is living on $50,000, $60,000, how are they going to pay rent? How are they going to pay mortgage? So it is highly irresponsible. Just this morning, we finally have one Republican, Mike Lawler, saying that he may side with Democrats, sign a discharge petition to get the government funded. If we can get five or six reasonable Republicans to do that, we can avert this crisis. But McCarthy has just failed to do the most basic function of a Speaker of the House, keep the government open and functioning.
What does it mean when the government shuts down? Explain who gets affected right off October 1st.
Well, all the federal workers get affected. As I pointed out, military personnel would not be paid. You would not get pay if you're a federal employee. This will impact the level of services that people get at the parks. It'll impact the level of services they get if you need a Social Security check or you need a government assistance for anything. It will impact our immigration services at a time where the Republicans are screaming, saying that we are not processing immigration cases fast enough. This would slow that down. So it would just be a total self-inflicted injury that would make life much harder for ordinary Americans, particularly for people who serve in our military or in the federal government in any way.
You talk about the military. You also have what's going on in the Senate right now with the Alabama former football coach, now Senator Tuberville, stopping the confirmation of top military officials. Explain how that works in coupling with the surprise that House Republican members are no longer supporting funding the military.
Well, look, to the extent that there's some House Republicans who are against the bloated Pentagon budget of $1 trillion, I welcome that. I mean, I interviewed or questioned Lockheed Martin CEO about 40% profits on the Patriot system, and we definitely need accountability and strategic cuts in the defense contractor profits. The problem is you can't just stop funding our military and stop paying the troops. And that's what the extreme Republicans are for. And you can't do what Senator Tuberville is doing, which is hold up the appointment of senior military leaders and officials. That is hurting the morale of the military. And if there were ever a conflict, it hurts our readiness. It's highly irresponsible. And to my knowledge, no senator has ever done that before, holding up senior military appointments. It shows the need for systematic reform of the United States.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the film screening of Stories I've Told the Stars, Friday, September 22nd, from 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the Pacific Northwest College of Arts in Portland. Stories I've Told the Stars is a short documentary that features the stories of three men who left their homes in Ethiopia in the 80s to escape civil war. They share stories of their experiences as refugees, their journey to the United States, and their resettlement in the Pacific Northwest. Stories I've Told the Stars will show Friday, September 22nd from 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the Pacific Northwest College of Arts, 511 Northwest Broadway, in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Your cheating heart will make you weep.
September 17th is the 100th anniversary of the birth of Hank Williams Sr., one of the finest singer-songwriters this country has ever produced. KBOO's Swingin' Country is celebrating this event by dedicating an entire broadcast to the music of Hank Williams. Tune in to KBOO's Swingin' Country on Saturday, September 30th from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. for 3 hours of all things Hank Williams considered. We'll have songs sung by Hank, songs written by Hank, and songs about Hank. You don't want to miss it. Once again, that is Saturday, September 30th from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. on KBOO.FM or 90.7 FM in the Portland area. Son of a gun, we'll have some fun.
The sweetest one, me, oh my, oh.
Son of a gun, we'll have big fun on the bayou.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, former Portland Commissioner Joanne Hardesty accepts a settlement in her lawsuit against the Portland Police Union.
The UAW strike makes it to the metro area, with Beaverton auto workers on the picket line.
And the Biden administration funds tribal fish restoration in the Upper Columbia River.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, September 22nd, 2023. I'm Josh Salem.
And I'm Ender Black. Former Portland City Commissioner Joanne Hardesty accepts a settlement in her lawsuit against the Portland Police Union for $680,000. The lawsuit was against the Portland Police Association and two officers. Hardesty was the first black woman to serve on Portland City Council. In March of 2021, a driver reported a minor car accident, a hit and run, and claimed the driver responsible was Hardesty. That driver was later found to be another black woman from Washington, not Hardesty. But the tip from the driver was leaked to the media and published by the Oregonian. Hardesty's lawsuit accused then-union president Brian Hunziker of leaking the news to the Oregonian. An internal investigation found that Hunziker may have been retaliating against Hardesty for her criticism of the police bureau and calls for greater oversight. The lawsuit also accused Officer Kerry Ottoman of sharing the 911 report that named Hardesty to a political action committee called the Coalition to Save Portland, which in turn spread the false allegation widely on Facebook. Originally, Hardesty requested $3 million from the Portland Police Association and $1 million from both Hunziker and Ottoman. The trial was scheduled to begin Monday, but instead a settlement of $680,000 was reached. If it had gone to trial, jurors would have been asked to determine whether the defendants engaged in race discrimination and retaliation and whether Hardesty's race was a factor in the leak. By settling the case, the union and the officers are clear of wrongdoing.
The United Auto Workers strike has made its way to Oregon, with workers at the Daimler facility in Beaverton out on the picket line today. The strike started at three plants in the Midwest, and it has now grown to involve 38 sites across 20 states. They're focused on two of the three large automakers, Stellantis and GM. The UAW says negotiations with Ford have progressed, so they're not striking there. 40 Beaverton warehouse employees walked off the job today. Their warehouse distributes Chrysler doors, transmissions, and other large auto parts. Chrysler, Jeep, and Ram are owned by Stellantis. The UAW is seeking a 46% pay increase over 4 years, because that's how much they say the Ford, GM, and Stellantis top executives increased, while worker wage changes were minimal. They're also trying to get back things they gave up when the auto companies were in a financial crisis 15 years ago. Rob Perdue is the president of UAW Local 492. Perdue told COIN, quote, "We gave up bonuses. We gave up things for these companies to survive, with these promises that we would get some of it back, when unfortunately the companies over the years have been slow in giving back anything," end quote. The big three automakers have different rhetorical tactics when it comes to how they've reacted to the strikes. GM called the strikes unnecessary, Stellantis said they're political, and Ford has said they're working diligently to come to an agreement with the union.
The hunger of many Oregonians is in the spotlight during Hunger Action Month this September. People continue to struggle even as pandemic aid subsides. Eric Tegedov reports.
September is Hunger Action Month, and many Oregonians are struggling to get the food they need. At their annual State of Hunger address, CEO of Oregon Food Bank, Susanna Morgan, said more than a million people are expected to seek emergency food assistance through their network. She says despite the worst days of the pandemic coming to a close, people are struggling for other reasons.
We hear time and time again from parents, seniors, and young people alike that food and housing prices are still too high to make ends meet, with the type of jobs and pay that are available, let alone for folks on fixed incomes like Social Security.
Morgan says federal food assistance, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, is the most important in the fight against hunger because of its scale. However, expanded pandemic benefits ended in March. A recent study found SNAP recipients experienced a 21% increase in food insufficiency after the increase ended. Vicki Schwafferman with Oregon Food Bank says making sure food is available and affordable for everyone is crucial to food justice.
Food justice is dismantling systemic barriers that lead to people of color, immigrants and refugees, single moms and caregivers, and our gender expansive neighbors experiencing hunger at a disproportionately high rate.
Morgan notes that other factors contribute to hunger, such as the increasing of wildfires and other climate disasters.
Simply the truth that climate change and climate disruptions are causing hunger, and the need for support here and across the country is real.
For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
The owners of the Lloyd Center Mall have unveiled a new plan for redeveloping the area, transforming the site into a mixed-use neighborhood. They plan to preserve the mall centerpiece ice rink, but also want to add housing, shopping, and entertainment venues. Most of the existing mall will be torn down and redeveloped over time, but not all at once. Lloyd Center got a significant amount of attention earlier this summer, when a group hoping to bring Major League Baseball to Portland honed in on it as a potential site. That remains a possibility, but the first phase of the redevelopment would be to build housing units on that site. The plan has been submitted in an application for a design advice request with the City of Portland's Design Commission.
Oregon has a new law that aims to help improve government openness and accountability. The law, House Bill 2805, passed in June, and it deals with public meetings and what sort of information the government was to provide to the public. Under public meeting law in Oregon, any government body that holds a meeting has to issue a notice to the public that includes location, time, and a list of, quote, principal subjects, end quote, that will be covered. House Bill 2805 creates a system of accountability for when governments don't meet those requirements. If a member of the public notices a violation, they will now have the chance to make a complaint to the public body within 30 days. If the body doesn't respond or denies doing anything wrong, the law also gives the public the ability to file a complaint with the Government Ethics Commission. The law will be fully implemented in early 2024 in order to give government bodies time to train their staffs.
For the second time in 10 years, Senator Robert Menendez has been indicted on corruption charges. Menendez is chairman of the powerful Senate Foreign Relations Committee. The New Jersey Democrat has been charged with three crimes, including participation in a bribery conspiracy. According to the federal indictment, Menendez and his wife have been accused of accepting, quote, hundreds of thousands of dollars in bribes, end quote, in exchange for his influence. Three other people, described as New Jersey associates and a businessman, have also been charged. All five of the defendants will appear in federal court on Wednesday. In 2015, Menendez was also indicted on federal corruption charges, but the trial ended in a hung jury, and the charges were eventually dropped. Menendez is up for re-election next year, but New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy and other state Democratic leaders have called upon him to resign. The governor said that, quote, the alleged facts are so serious that they compromise the senator's ability to do his job, end quote. If Menendez resigns, the governor will name an interim replacement until the election in the fall of 2024.
U.S.-based Jewish groups are protesting in New York at the United Nations General Assembly today. Farah Siddiqui has the details.
Protests have heightened in New York as Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu joins the United Nations General Assembly today. Sonia Meyerson-Knox with the group Jewish Voice for Peace says it's important that protesters not limit their objection to Netanyahu's far-right government, but also to what she calls the apartheid.
There is no place for the way that the Israeli state has been behaving. This is not how we want to see Palestinians treated. This is not how we want to see anyone treated. It's not one bad apple. It is not merely Netanyahu. It's the entire system of apartheid. Supremacy anywhere is a threat to everyone. And so the way that the Israeli state has been enacting Jewish supremacy is therefore a problem.
Protests are ongoing in New York surrounding the UN General Assembly. There are also several protests in Israel. Rabbi Josh Weinberg of Israel and Reform Zionism for the Union for Reform Judaism says he has other reasons for protesting. He says Israel's hard-right judicial overhaul has caused high-tech firms to pull their investments from the country, Weinberg says it's caused senior officers and pilots to question.
So standing around the world caused great instability. And to those who are in, for instance, the boycott, divestment, sanctions movement are seeing this as open fodder for them on Israel. You know, those who are accusing Israel of being an apartheid state, which I strongly Netanyahu's government get their way.
Guy Horowitz with Unacceptable, a pro-democracy group that opposes Israel's judicial overhaul, started planning the protests around Netanyahu's visit. Horowitz says it's important that the leadership in Israel become less polarized.
I'm pretty sure that every Palestinian understands that Israel is more risky and dangerous to the Palestinians' well-being when haters are at the helm. There are talks about a potential accord with Saudi Arabia. Does Netanyahu have the mandate to sign? From the right side or from the left side?
Horowitz is referring to Netanyahu's meeting Wednesday with President Joe Biden, after which they announced efforts to work together to cement diplomatic relationships between Israel and Saudi Arabia. For New York News Connection, I'm Farah Siddiqui.
The Pentagon wants to help service members denied benefits under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Advocates backed the new federal office of gun violence prevention. And a top GOP member assures the Ukrainian president more help is coming. With more on those stories, it's Catherine Carley with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
For we are not a nation that says, don't ask, don't tell. We are a nation that says, out of many, we are one. We are a nation that welcomes the service of every patriot.
Former President Barack Obama ended the unpopular compromise that had allowed gay people to silently serve in the military. Now the Pentagon is reaching out to the 33,000 vets who may have been denied honorable discharges under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. For the second time this week, a handful of House conservatives are blocking the normally bipartisan vote to advance defense funding. That makes an end-of-the-month government shutdown more likely, which is a problem for Speaker Kevin McCarthy.
This is a whole new concept of individuals that just want to burn the whole place down. It doesn't work.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky met with lawmakers yesterday. Chairman of House Foreign Affairs Michael McCaul of Texas says Congress will provide more military aid to Ukraine, despite pushback from other Republicans and what he describes as slack work by the White House.
We need a plan for victory from this administration. We need accountability, and we need the weapons in yesterday.
The administration is asking for an additional $24 billion. Rupert Murdoch, the man behind the troubled Fox News network, says he's stepping down, turning his media empire over to his eldest son. Fox is credited with boosting former President Donald Trump, but has since been sued over election disinformation. Hollywood studios and striking screenwriters are reportedly near an agreement. That could end the five-month work stoppage, which has helped halt most film and television productions, although a related actor strike remains unresolved. The strike by auto workers is growing. So far, only select locals in Michigan, Missouri, and Ohio have walked off the job, but UAW President Sean Fain says more will stop work at noon today if the big three automakers don't make a substantially better offer.
We're going to keep hitting the company where we need to win.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 6, it's the 2023 KBOO Candidate Forum, followed by 3 episodes of World Ocean Radio. Then at 7, Civic Cipher. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with a low of 50 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be cloudy with a high of 66. Before heading into a few days of rain, starting Sunday. Today in history, in 1991, the Dead Sea Scrolls are made available to the public for the first time. They are a set of ancient Jewish manuscripts from between the 3rd century BCE and the 1st century CE. They're considered a keystone in the history of archaeology with great historical, religious, and linguistic significance. The quote of the day is from American baseball player Yogi Berra, who died this day in 2015. He said, quote, "You've got to be very careful if you don't know where you're going, because you might not get there."
The Biden administration will fully fund Native tribe plans to reintroduce salmon into the upper Columbia River. It'll cost $200 million, but represents a course correction from previous efforts of some federal agencies to resist tribal salmon restoration. It's been 80 years since the construction of the Grand Coulee Dam rendered salmon extinct in parts of Washington, Idaho, and British Columbia. The construction of the dam destroyed Kettle Falls, a regional trading hub and sacred site for many salmon-dependent tribes. Salmon spawn in rivers and migrate to the sea as young fish, returning to their home waters as adults. The plan to reintroduce salmon was developed by a coalition of tribes along the Upper Columbia River in 2015. Long term, that means building hatcheries, releasing fish into the waters above Grand Coulee, tracking their migration, and developing plans to pass fish safely around the dams. That could involve techniques like trapping the fish and trucking them up or downstream. The Bonneville Power Administration had previously put up roadblocks to the plan, not wanting any accounting for fish to cut into the cheap hydroelectricity produced at the dam. They'll put up $200 million over the next 20 years to implement the tribe's plan. Jared Michael Erickson is the chair of the Confederated Tribes of the Colville Reservation in Northeast Washington. Erickson told ProPublica, quote, "We will bring salmon back where they belong, to the waters of the Upper Columbia. The Colville tribes look forward to our children celebrating a ceremony of joy when salmon are permanently restored to their natural waters," end quote. While a historic agreement has been reached to reintroduce salmon in the Upper Columbia, the fate of the four Snake River dams remains a question. Tribes and advocates have urged their removal for years, and federal scientists agree that it's necessary for salmon to recover. Negotiators face a deadline of the end of October.
An all-women skate competition on the Navajo Nation is expected to shred this weekend. With that story and more, it's Jill Freites with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Jill Freites from KMBA in Anchorage, Alaska, filling in for Antonia Gonzalez. A first-of-its-kind all-women skateboard competition is coming to Navajo Nation Saturday at the Two Gray Hills Skate Park. The Skate Jam skateboard competition will bring together women and girls to put their hard work and practice to the test. Amy Danette Deal is the founder of For Kinship, an Indigenous-owned clothing brand and organizer of the Dines State Garden Park Project. She says while spending a day at the skate park with one of her groups, one of the girls came up with an idea of having an all-women skateboard competition.
And I'm like, let's do it. And they came up with a name, and they've just all been working together the last 2 months to really make this happen. And it's been a great experience.
Deal said using skateboarding to bring the community together just made sense.
I'm not a skater, you know, but I'm an executive from the active sports industry. And I personally know so many athletes, and every single one says the same thing to me of like, Amy, skateboarding changed my life. It saved my life. It's like people that struggle with, say, mental health issues or just health issues, there's always a place for them within the sport. It's something you can do anytime. You can do it by yourself. You can do it with friends. It's just a great way to process emotion that you go through during the day and things that you struggle with. So I knew it was just such a great way to bring a really beautiful tool to our kids.
The event will also raise awareness for the need for equipment for the Diné youth and will help the organizations get to their goal of providing 2,030 youth on Navajo Nation with skate equipment.
We've made a really beautiful partnership with a company called Monarch Skateboards. I just have to raise a lot of money between now and the end of the year, and I'm down for that because it's just necessary for these kids to be able to experience the sport. So we have $25,000 left to fund before end of the year, but I know we can do it.
Over a dozen projects in Oregon have received funds as part of a federal initiative to cut greenhouse gas emissions. KLCC's Brian Bull reports.
Altogether, 15 projects in 11 counties and two Native American tribes received money. About $13 million has been made available for small urban and rural projects that cut greenhouse gases from transportation. Ryan Webb is the engineering and planning manager for the Confederated Tribes of the Grand Ronde, which is getting almost $700,000 for 4 electric vehicles and 2 charging stations.
People of this land have always been good stewards of it, and I think being able to be considerate in how we can limit
limit the impact that that footprint has. And it's one component of what the tribe does when we look at kind of sustainable projects or our footprint on the land.
The Oregon Department of Transportation says 5 years of federal funding will come to $82 million for state projects. ODOT says it aims to lower the state's greenhouse gas emissions by 60% by 2050. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
The 8th president of Haskell Indian Nations University in Lawrence, Kansas, was sworn in this week. His leadership comes as the tribal college is serving the most Native American students in 12 years. Dr. Frank Arpan was officially inaugurated in a ceremony along with his Yankton Sioux Tribal Council in attendance. Arpan says his focus is on a holistic environment. Arpan stated that Haskell has more than 880 students representing 140 tribal nations at Haskell this year. I'm Jill Freitas.
Young Georgia residents may soon redefine the state's political landscape. The Brookings Institution reveals in a report that millennials and Gen Z, who tend to lean Democratic, now form the largest generational group. This surge in diversity among younger voters could trigger significant political changes in the coming years. Shantaya Hudson has more.
Their partisanship, their political attitudes, and their media usage than voters who are over 45.
Research also reveals millennials and Gen Z will make up the majority of potential voters by 2028, and they'll represent more than 60% of potential U.S. voters by 2036. It also highlights that if Democrats don't run campaigns that focus on younger voters, they could jeopardize the allegiance of a growing majority of voters. Dakota Hall with the Alliance for Youth Action says another shift is that young voters demand significant change and won't settle for minimal reform.
These are folks who went to high school and witnessed nothing but on news coverage on their different social media feeds of Trump, of like dysfunction, of government shutdowns, and then a global pandemic, right? And so they've seen the worst of what this country can be, and I think they want to push us forward.
According to research from the Alliance, a majority of Democratic voters prioritize protecting abortion access and other key issues like democracy reform, voting rights, affordable health care, gun violence, and climate change, while young Republicans are more concerned about the economy and inflation. This is Shantia Hudson for Georgia News Connection.
An Idaho group helps protect farm workers from heat and smoke. The Idaho Immigrant Resource Alliance distributes drinking water, sunscreen, face masks, and other supplies to farm workers across the state. Dr. Anthony Leitzowitz has more on this story with Climate Connection.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leitzowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Being outside in the hot sun can be uncomfortable and dangerous. But some farm workers remain in the fields even when temperatures soar.
If you're not working, you're not making money, and so then you're not putting food on your table.
Irene Ruiz is a former farm worker and co-founder of the Idaho Immigrant Resource Alliance, a coalition to support immigrant communities in the state. She says many farm workers are also exposed when wildfire smoke causes unhealthy levels of air pollution. And as the climate changes, the risks are growing.
It's getting hotter. We're seeing smoke happening more often.
So 2 years ago, her group started a heat and smoke farm worker relief fund.
It was just something that we felt we needed to do in order to protect those who are putting food on our tables.
The team collects donations, and then they buy and distribute drinking water, sunscreen, face masks, and other supplies to farm workers across the state of Idaho. Ruiz says many are appreciative of the support.
They are so excited, and they're so grateful that there are people out there that actually care about what they do and the work that they do for us. They're happy that we're out there doing this for them.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, September 22nd, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Ray Bodwell and Chris Gao. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Catherine Carley, Shantia Hudson, Jill Freitas, and Dr. Anthony Leisowitz. The director of the Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available at our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem.
And I'm Andrew Black. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Don't miss KBOO's birthday block party happening tomorrow on Southeast 8th and Ankeny from noon to 10 p.m. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, an unprecedented labor action is underway as thousands of Midwest auto workers working for the Big Three, Ford, GM, and Stellantis, which used to be Chrysler, went on strike at the same time. Some things the workers are calling for sound familiar. A pay raise for workers that bears relation to those that owners have generously given themselves, consideration of cost of living increases. And then other things they're calling for, a shorter work week,